Today, French police stormed an apartment. Two died, including a woman who detonated a suicide vest. This hour, how the Paris attacks are changing politics and changing minds. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Also following the reports that a Syrian migrant may have been involved in last week's attacks in Paris, more than half of U.S. governors say they don't want Syrian refugees. This hour, international political analysts Wayne Moyer of Grinnell College and Jim McCormick of Iowa State University weigh in on the latest. Have the attacks changed your view of accepting refugees to Iowa? Have you turned more hawkish on combating ISIS? Join our discussion. First, this news. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. International politics slated for today, obviously, with the Paris attacks a few days behind us. The aftermath we're continuing to hear in our news. Joining us are international politics experts Jim McCormick, professor of political science at Iowa State University in our Ames studio. So glad you were available this week, Jim.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me on.
Wayne Moyer, Rosenfield Professor of Political Science at Grinnell College in Grinnell, joining us by phone. Hello, Wayne.
Hi, Ben.
Well, we have this morning woke up to the news of French police storming an apartment in a northern Paris suburb in an attempt to find the Belgian man suspected of orchestrating these Paris terrorist attacks. Two people dying in the raid this morning, including a young woman who detonated an explosive vest. Seven people arrested. Here are some sounds from that northern Paris suburb. Also this morning, French President François Hollande addressing his country. He said his country is at war with terrorists, and today's early morning raids were intended to rid a suburb north of Paris of those suspected of the attacks. Here's Hollande speaking through an interpreter today.
These acts show once again that we are at war.
Une guerre contre un terrorisme.
We are at war against terrorism.
A décidé de nous mener la guerre.
Terrorism, which declared war on us.
Daesh.
It is the Daesh jihadist organization. It has an army.
De ressources financières.
It has financial resources. It has oil.
Elle occupe un territoire.
It has a territory.
En Europe.
It has allies
et
in Europe,
propre pays, avec
including in our country, with young radicalized Islamist people.
Là-bas.
It commits atrocities there and wishes to kill here. It has killed here.
French President François Hollande speaking today after more attacks to find out if they can see find a Belgian man suspected of orchestrating the terrorist attacks of last Friday. Jim McCormick, Wayne Moyer. Jim, let me start with you. This certainly represents some kind of turning point. How can you describe the turning point you see?
Well, I think it is a turning point in the sense that it's really kind of energized and involved the French. They had been involved previously with regard to ISIS, but this obviously has really moved them in an entirely different direction. I think it has also energized and moved the Russians here in terms of taking on ISIS. I guess I wonder about the rest of the international community, to what extent it will be energized and mobilized, I guess, maybe would be a stronger term here, to take action here. I think that's but this has clearly been a major event. They've been comparing it to France's 9/11, and I don't think that that's such a bad comparison.
Wayne.
Well, I would agree with everything Jim said. I would add maybe this will provide a possibility for the Russia and France and the United States to work together to try to get a ceasefire in Syria and work toward a peace settlement in Syria. The other thing that I hope it does, but I'm not sure it'll do yet, and I think it follows what Jim was saying, is get all of the people who are against ISIS, some of the Arab countries, Iran, Russia, the United States, Saudi Arabia on the same page in terms of what they're willing to do in terms of dealing with ISIS.
Mm-hmm.
It seems to me that the target really has now become ISIS. I mean, I think the Americans have made a concession here. That Assad's going to stay in power. Maybe they did that a long, long time ago, but I think it's now more explicit that Assad is going to stay in power in Syria. So the first task here is to do something about ISIS, and maybe that will, as Wayne says, you know, they, some of the Gulf state countries, you know, they have really targeted Assad, it seems to me, and some of them. And so now maybe they'll get on board with regard to ISIS.
Jim McCormick with us and Wayne Moyer with us, our political analyst, as we look at the aftermath of the Paris attacks, how it affects our politics. We'll also look at how it is affecting us here in this country. Certainly the refugee debate we want to talk about a little bit later in the hour, affecting our very states. Do the attacks change your opinion about what should be done to combat ISIS? We want to hear from you, River to River listeners, 1-866-780-9100, River to River at iowapublicradio.org, our email, Iowa Public Radio. Also on Facebook, there's a lively conversation going on there about the refugee question. Go to Iowa Public Radio's Facebook page. We'll be sharing some of the responses that you, our listeners, have put up there a little bit later in the hour. Or you can tweet us at IPR Talk. Let's talk a little bit but more about what you mentioned there. Russia yesterday saying that it was coordinating with the French military and sharply ratcheting up some attacks on Syrian territory, especially the territory held by the Islamic State. The government of Russia also, so much news, almost buried, though not really, the acknowledgement by the Russian government for the first time that a bomb had destroyed the Russian charter jet that crashed more than 2 weeks ago in Egypt. And early today, President Obama saying he was open to cooperating with Russia in the campaign against the Islamic State, but only if the government of President Putin begins targeting the militant group. Wayne Moyer, explain a little bit more about what that is, because the Russians have been, or have they not been, only targeting the Islamic State?
Well, they've been mostly targeting the Syrian opponents of President Assad. Most of their airstrikes have not been directed against ISIS at all, but rather the group that was most threatening to President Assad. And I think the overall issue here is I don't think the ISIS problem can be solved until Assad essentially is out of power or on the way out of power. And the Russians see Assad staying in power as a way of maintaining their influence in Syria and in the Middle East. And any really long-term cooperation with the Russians, I think, is going to be very difficult as long as the Russians are holding on as strongly as they have been.
So this is a point where you disagree with Jim that Jim, if I understood you correctly, you think that the U.S. will say, okay, we'll have to put up with Assad for the moment because we've got a much bigger problem.
Well, I think Secretary of State Kerry has said that in terms of the discussions in Vienna, that there would be for a time allowance for Assad to stay in power. And what came out of the meeting on Sunday between President Obama and President Putin was the idea of maybe going to the UN to get some kind of framework arrangement for a long-term solution in Syria. My fear is, and actually I agree with Wayne, that after ISIS is maybe taken out of the picture, or at least reduced substantially, I'm not sure how much the Russians will continue to cooperate. I think that's really the over the sort of long-term plan of doing something about Assad. I think there's sort of a temporary kind of cooperation, but not long-term.
Is it a foregone conclusion that with all the U.S., Russians, many of the world powers now targeting ISIS, is it a foregone conclusion that they will be defeated, do you think, Jim?
Well, I don't think it's really ultimately a military defeat will solve the problem of ISIS. I mean, there's got to be a much larger strategy, which we've really alluded to. It's the situation with regard to Syria has to be resolved. What has not been part of this discussion very much is what about the Sunnis that have been alienated from the Iraqi government? So it does require, you know, different set of different tracks here. My own view is that, yes, ISIS militarily has to be degraded. I hate to use that term, but, you know, because I'm not sure it can be totally defeated, but it certainly has to be degraded so it is not feel that it can engage in these extraterritorial bombings and so on. But I think the larger task for this president and probably for a future administration is devising a political strategy that will somehow bring Iraq back together, the Kurds. I mean, this has involved Turkey. It's much more complicated. I'm sympathetic with the Obama administration that sometimes these kind of quick solutions of just if we had more bombing of ISIS, that would solve the issue. The issue is really more long term in terms of trying to put together a package of political strategies to solve these other regional issues.
Yeah, I would add to what Jim is saying. Diplomacy is absolutely critical to this. Bombing will not do the job by itself. Massive ground troops will not do the job by itself. We will probably have to put more special forces in. We will probably have to put forward observers in to coordinate air operations. We may have to draw some red lines along the borders where helicopters cannot cross to protect people who are potential refugees. We need to tighten the financial noose. But a big blunderbuss approach of just more bombing isn't going to do it.
Join our conversation to the attacks on Paris, the aftermath. Change your opinion about what should be done to combat ISIS. Do the attacks change your view of whether or not we here in Iowa and across the U.S. should be welcoming or more wary of refugees, especially from Syria to Iowa and other states here in the U.S.? 1-866-780-9100, river to river at iowapublicradio.org. Iowa Public Radio also on Facebook or tweet us at IPR Talk. Let's talk about what's been happening here as a result of it, that refugee question. Governors across the country in 27 states are declaring that they will not accept any more Syrian refugees to their states after the attacks in Paris. Iowa Governor Terry Branstad is one of them. He said earlier this week that his main concern is safety for U.S. citizens.
I share the concern of the other governors about the safety and well-being of our citizens after what we saw happen in Paris.
And Branstad says he hopes the federal government will be transparent about where they will send Syrian refugees to.
Even if they're placed in another state, their movement is then free within this country. So they might be placed in another state and move here.
Okay. And New Jersey governor, also GOP presidential candidate Chris Christie, said in an interview with Salem Radio Network host Hugh Hewitt that he wouldn't even admit an orphan into the United States at this point.
I do not trust this administration to effectively vet the people who are proposed to be coming in order to protect the safety and security of the American people, so I would not permit them in.
What if they were orphans under the age of 5?
You know, Hugh, we could come up with 18 different scenarios. The fact is that we need appropriate vetting, and I don't think orphans under 5 are being, you know, should be admitted into the United States at this point.
Okay. Wayne Moyer, what do you think of this move by the majority of governors in the country, including our own governor, saying we won't accept any more Syrian refugees? I guess the constitutionality of it is one question. Governors do not have the right to block.
No, they don't. Let me say first, I'm very much concerned that this has become a partisan issue. I think most of the governors who are opposed to it are Republicans. The second thing that I think gets lost in all of this is what's the risk that you're likely to undertake when you allow refugees in? It appears that only one of the 7 people who were involved in the Paris bombing came in as a refugee. It appears that most of the terrorists were French or Belgian citizens. Those people can come to the U.S. under tourist visas. So are we really increasing a risk that already exists by blocking refugees? I doubt it.
Jim McCormick?
Well, I agree with Wayne. I think that, you know, here we have this situation of how much compassion versus how much security. And, you know, some of the governors, it seems to me, have obviously opted for the security side of that sort of continuum here. And I really think that, you know, the risk is relatively nominal here, if at all. I do think what's going to happen, frankly, is I know that the speaker, the new Speaker of the House, is proposing a bill or at least a resolution calling for a pause in the admittance of refugees here until they can monitor how much vetting is going on. And even the administration has said the vetting of some of these refugees would take 18 months to 2 years. So I think what we're going to see is probably not a stand down by the administration saying that they're going to change their policy. They're not. But on the part of the Congress, depending on how much of a vote there is, if there's a bipartisan vote in the Congress or in the House in this case, I think that then there will be a sort of a pullback of how quickly this is done. But I think the risk is pretty nominal and probably with sufficient new procedures in vetting. I think the administration's got a problem because some of its key officials have said that the vetting is not up to, you know, what that they don't have good vetting procedures. And I think that there's probably got to be some attention to that.
1-866-780-9100. Let's go to Nathan in Des Moines. Nathan dialed that number. Nathan, I understand you work with refugees here in Iowa.
I do. I work for a pro bono immigration law clinic in Des Moines, and I have worked on naturalization applications for many families of refugees. And I can say from my own personal experience doing this work that these families, especially those fleeing civil war, as the Syrian refugees are, they have endured unimaginable suffering that I guarantee no American politician or virtually any media commentator could even conceive of. I'm seeing cases involving individuals whose families were executed by extortionist gangs, people who lost all their identifying documents fleeing senseless civil wars in Africa. I mean, I could go on and on. I'll just say right here, right now, that if being an Iowan means not welcoming the victims of these unimaginable tragedies to our state, I don't know how I could call myself an Iowan. I mean,
Nathan, Nathan, tell us, though, do you have any security concerns? People are having a lot of concerns. For instance, Jeffrey on our Facebook page says, I wish the governor was a little firmer on this issue by saying absolutely no refugees in Iowa, not based on vetting.
Well, the vetting is already extensive. As your guest noted, it takes years for a refugee to make it from a camp to an ultimate settlement here in Iowa. And in addition to that, there are several federal laws that have been passed since 9/11 that already require immigration officers to screen all potential refugees for connections to terrorism. And in the course of the refugee resettlement process, if there is any question by our State Department regarding or any party in this process that is managed by the UN High Commission on Refugees, if there is any question about someone's connection to terrorism, they are immediately halted and reviewed. I mean, these people do not slip through the cracks, quote unquote, as people say. There is a litigation, there is an appeal process, there is an extensive process that our government puts these people through, especially due to the TRIG laws and the terrorism-related inadmissibility grounds, TRIG is the acronym, laws that have been passed since 9/11, the USA Patriot Act, the Real ID Act, all of these laws are in place to prevent such people from making it into the United States.
Okay, Nathan, thank you very much. Please hold on the line. I think we'll get in touch with you. We may want to get back to you at some future point. Nathan, thank you for calling from Des Moines. He evidently handles refugee cases and applications. But there is a lot of back and forth here, a lot of Sonia on our Facebook page. I'm so happy that the governor is looking for the safety of our state and the people who live here. If you read the article, he isn't saying no to immigrants, but halting the process until they are screened for ties to extremist groups. Better than letting them in and having to spend even more money hunting them down. Jim McCormick, so you seem to be saying that we'll find a compromise there, that that will assure people that we can't rule out every case. There could be one in the future, the system is there to check these people.
That's what I think will happen. I think that they're, you know, the proposal in the House, is at least what I've read about it, is that they want to really review the vetting procedures that are available. And I think if they can be reassured that the vetting procedures are exhaustive, as the administration has maintained, and as our caller suggested there, I think that it will go forward here. And that, And frankly, in a normative sense, I think it should go forward. Then that we really do. This is a nation of immigrants, and certainly for refugees, we ought to give them a safe house.
Let me just say something on this. I think the way the governors frame their statements is critical. By just saying no refugees coming in at all, you actually end up scaring people more than they probably need to be scared. If you were to emphasize the need to follow precautions in terms of checking people out before one goes ahead with it, that's a very different way, and I think a much more productive way of dealing with the issue.
Let's go to Ben in Bettendorf. He dialed 1-866-780-9100, asking you to weigh in on the refugee debate, whether refugees should still be welcome or in the United States, especially those from Syria. And do the attacks change your opinion about what should be done to combat ISIS, the Islamic State? Ben in Bettendorf, welcome to our program. What's your view?
I called in about the actual military response to ISIS. The French right now, according to DefenseNews.com and according to Jane's and Reuters, when they attacked with their fighters, they were based in Jordan and the United Arab Emirates with a dozen aircraft. Right now, what we're seeing with them moving their aircraft carrier into the Persian Gulf is a larger extension of French air power than they've done literally since the Persian Gulf War. They are going to be adding to our stuff. There's going to be more carriers, more warships in the Mediterranean and the Persian Gulf at any time since perhaps 2008, since the surge.
Okay. Ben in Bettendorf, thank you very much for that piece of information. Back to our Facebook page, Gary Ann says a knee-jerk reaction is to halt all resettlement of refugees from Syria. Most are women and children, the more westernized and religious minorities. Take a deep breath. Begin logically. Children are unlikely to be terrorists. A non-Muslim is unlikely to belong to ISIS. Start small. Help those who wouldn't cause issues. What about, before we go to break, what about what has been uttered by some that only the Christians should be let in? Wayne Moyer.
Oh, I think that's terrible, because in some ways that turns us into a war against Islam, which is absolutely the worst thing that we can possibly do. That's the sort of thing that's likely to recruit more terrorists. And that's totally, I think, against the American tradition as well.
Mm-hmm. Jim McCormick, you feel the same?
I agree very much so. Yep.
Okay. We want to come back in just a few minutes and talk more about the aftermath of the Paris attacks, and we want to hear from you as well. Have the attacks changed your opinion about what should be done to combat ISIS? What do you think about parallels being made between what's happening now and what happened in World War II, when there was a point at which an all-out offensive was made to crush Hitler? 1-866-780-9100. 1-866-780-9100. And we'll be back with more of River to River in just a moment from Iowa Public Radio News. Back with more of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. We're talking about the aftermath of last Friday's attacks in Paris. Also this morning in the Paris suburb, raids intended to rid the suburb of those suspected of the attacks. And we want to hear from you how this has changed perhaps your thinking. Talking about how it's changed the politics worldwide with Jim McCormick, professor of political science at Iowa State University. Also, Wayne Moyer, Rosenfield professor of political science at Grinnell College. Join our conversation, 1-866-780-9100. You alluded to this, I think, earlier, Wayne Moyer, when we talk about the reaction in this country. Perhaps we can sort of turn the lens the other way and look at it through or try to, through the perspective of ISIS. What does ISIS want the West to do? What is the most wished for reaction from leaders and from the population?
My suspicion is that part of what ISIS wants is for us to put ground troops again, or ground troops in Syria and again in Iraq. And the sense is that then that will help them mobilize the people behind them, get rid of the foreign invader, and that the same thing will happen to us that happened earlier in Iraq and Afghanistan, where we will get bogged down over time. The other thing that I think they're doing is simply to inspire fear in us. And in the process of inspiring fear in us, increase their recruiting ability. There are a lot of alienated Muslims around the world, and somehow or other, if they make us blink, if they make us change the way that we act, that will increase their appeal to some of these disenfranchised people.
Mm-hmm. Jim McCormick, anything to add to that?
No, I think Wayne's right. I mean, the idea of having ground troops, you know, in terms of this kind of final battle that ISIS has talked about, in terms of taking on the apostates and so on, I think it really fuels that. And the other thing about fear, surely, of sort of overreacting by instead of having a kind of a systematic strategy to deal with this issue, will also have, I think, the intended effect upon some ISIS followers or potential ISIS followers.
More than half of the U.S. governors say they don't want Syrian refugees. Most of the refugees from Syria are Muslim. They don't want them resettled in their states. I even report some Republicans in Congress even threatening a government shutdown over the issue. Not exclusively Republicans. There are some Democrats in there, too. President Obama addressed the nation from the Philippines yesterday. He scolded Republicans, saying the political posturing needs to stop.
We are not well served when, in response to a terrorist attack, we descend into fear and panic. We don't make good decisions if it's based on hysteria or an exaggeration of risks. When candidates say we wouldn't admit three-year-old orphans, that's political posturing. When individuals say that we should have a religious test and that only Christians, proven Christians, should be admitted, that's offensive and contrary to American values. I cannot think of a more potent recruitment tool for ISIL than some of the rhetoric that's been coming out of here during the course of this debate. ISIL seeks to exploit the idea that there is a war between Islam and the West. And when you start seeing individuals in positions of responsibility suggesting that Christians are more worthy of protection than Muslims are in a war-torn land, that feeds the ISIL narrative.
Okay, President Obama there talking from the Philippines. Let's go back to our phones in Iowa City. Ron has been standing by. Hi, Ron. What is your view on this?
Hi, Ben. Thanks for taking my call. I really have little to add to what the president just said in that recording. This is so short-sighted of governors in our country to say these people are not worthy of refuge. We are fueling the narrative that ISIS is trying to perpetuate here by saying that children who are not Christian are less worthy than our own. I wish people would look at the pictures that we are getting out of the refugee camps and how these children are sleeping now. It is impossible for me to imagine how we cannot be ashamed as Iowans of our governor.
Thank you, Ron, in Iowa City, for that view. John, in Indianola, is your view similar or different?
My view is very different. And I would like to question this assumption that not allowing Muslims in America increases membership in ISIS. Have you ever heard one member of ISIS say, I joined up because we won't allow Muslims in America? I doubt that you have. And if they are joining up for that reason, then that's just more than we need to kill.
John in Indianola, reaction from Wayne or Jim on those last two calls.
I think it's not the issue that allowing not allowing Muslims into Iowa or any place else will cause them to join ISIS. I think it's creating a mentality of Christianity versus Islam that's problematic.
Okay. Let's talk a little bit about how this is impacting the presidential race. 2.5 months away from the first in the nation test of these candidates here in Iowa, the caucuses. We're hearing now also from a Republican elders in the GOP establishment, the emergence of this foreign policy to top the agenda will force voters to reevaluate the outsider candidates, which have been on the top of the list here, that also polling here in Iowa, in particular, both Donald Trump and Ben Carson displaying this, according to reports out by Politico, a lack of knowledge about national security and the terrorist threat. Let's go to one of the front runners. This is Ben Carson during the last Republican presidential debate. Carson asked if he supported the move by the president to put 50 special ops forces in Syria and leave 10,000 troops in Afghanistan. His response has been criticized as being word salad. See what you think.
Well, putting the special ops people in there is better than not having them there, because that's why they're called special ops. They're actually able to guide some of the other things that we're doing there. And what we have to recognize is that Putin is trying to really spread his influence throughout the Middle East. This is going to be his base. And we have to oppose him there in an effective way. We also must recognize that it's a very complex place. You know, the Chinese are there as well as the Russians, and you have all kinds of factions there. What we've been doing so far is very ineffective, but we can't give up ground right there. But we have to look at this on a much more global scale. We're talking about global jihadists, and their desire is to destroy us and to destroy our way of life. So we have to be saying, how do we make them look like losers? Because that's the way that they're able to gather a lot of influence. And I think in order to make them look like losers, we have to destroy their caliphate. And you look for the easiest place to do that, it would be in Iraq. And if outside of Anbar in Iraq, there's a big energy field, take that from them, take all of that land from them. We could do that, I believe, fairly easily. I've learned from talking to several generals. And then you move on from there. But you have to continue to face them, because our goal is not to contain them, but to destroy them before they destroy us.
Ben Carson, during last week's debate, of course, before the Paris attacks. Jim McCormick, what do you think of that Middle East analysis?
Well, I think your descriptor of the sort of a word salad there is pretty accurate. I mean, he touched on a lot of different things, but what didn't come through, it seems to me, and what, you know, all of these candidates probably on both sides of the aisle have to come up with is really sort of plans that they would have. What are the goals that the United States should be seeking? And more importantly, what are the sort of the strategies that should be set forth? What I heard there was talking about doing one thing here and there and everything. It didn't seem to create a picture of what this strategy would look like.
Also, he mentioned the Chinese being in Syria.
He did. Not to my knowledge. Chinese are not in Syria, to my knowledge, but that was a kind of an odd reference that he did make.
Okay, let's listen to – we want to get to Hillary Clinton, but before that, the other Republican front runner, Donald Trump, businessman Donald Trump, responding to the attacks in Paris by commenting on the gun laws that exist in France.
When you look at Paris, you know, the toughest gun laws in the world, Paris, nobody had guns but the bad guys. Nobody had guns. And they were just shooting them one by one. And then they broke in and had a big shootout and ultimately killed the terrorists. And I'll tell you what, you can say what you want, but if they had guns, if our people had guns, if they were allowed to carry, it would have been a much, much different situation. I hear it all the time. You know, you look at certain cities that have the highest violence, the highest problem with guns and shootings and killings. Chicago, as an example, toughest gun laws in the United States.
Okay.
Nothing but problems.
Donald Trump reacting to the Paris attacks. Wayne Moyer, let me hand that over to you for your reaction.
Well, okay, imagine you're in Paris and you're in this concert hall with 1,000 people who have been drinking. And imagine that they have handguns. And then you imagine these guys come in with AK-47s. Is this going to be a fair fight? It's not. And how many other people, innocent people, are likely to get killed in that kind of situation? I think it's just crazy.
Mm-hmm. What do you think about this idea, also coming from Republicans, establishment Republicans, that this foreign policy focus will force many people to reevaluate the outsider candidates, Trump, Carson, for instance, Wayne?
Well, I think as national security issues increase in importance for people, what candidates know about foreign policy is obviously going to become increasingly more important. And there are great dangers to increasing fear on the part of the American people. But maybe a positive consequence might be that they look more carefully at their candidates in terms of what they know about the world.
Okay, let's go to our phones briefly, Udall. Max in Des Moines, please be brief. We're coming up on the end of our hour, but what point do you want to make?
I just want to make the point that you guys were just kind of about Donald Trump and the fear-mongering and the fascism. The things that he's saying really remind me of, and I really want to hear your guest's take on this, but it reminds me of the flailing arms and the hatred that's coming out of his mouth about these particular groups of Hitler and the rise of fascism in Germany before he was in the power and how he became popular and the people he pandered to.
Okay.
I'm just wondering if you all see any similarities.
Okay, that's a very big step to take, Max. But Jim McCormick, how will you react
to
that?
Well, that's a big step to take. I mean, I do think that some of this kind of inflamed rhetoric is really, really dysfunctional for any kind of real debate over the truly important kind of foreign policy issues and national security kind of issues. And I think, you know, on the one hand, you know, there's a segment of the American public that likes these kind of simple solutions, and Americans are probably impatient. I mean, we've been at war for a long time and, you know, different wars and with regard to Iraq and Afghanistan. But I do think we have to step back and think about what is the kind of strategy that will really bring the outcome that we want. But, you know, there is some appeal, it seems to me, to try to get things done. And, you know, one of the things about, if I might say this, about the, you know, President Obama, he comes across as so dispassionate on some of these things. I mean, on the one hand, it's reassuring. On the other hand, to a lot of the American public, it's, you know, there is a concern, you know, whether he's going to really grab the reins here. And I think even his reaction in most recently in Turkey here in a kind of statement, no change in policy, you know, stay the course and so on, probably was not reassuring to some people.
Back to the 2016 race, we had a couple voices from the GOP side, the two front runners there. Let's listen to the front runner on the Democratic side. Some critical notes there. Former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton questioned about whether she and President Obama underestimated the threat ISIS posed to the U.S. This was during Saturday night's presidential debates at Drake.
I did early on say we needed to try to find a way to train and equip moderates very early so that we would have a better idea of how to deal with Assad, because I thought there would be extremist groups filling the vacuum. So, yes, this has developed. I think that there are many other reasons why it has, in addition to what happened in the region, but I don't think that the United States has the bulk of the responsibility. I really put that on Assad and on the Iraqis and on the region itself.
Wayne Moyer with the reemergence of foreign policy as a focus atop everything, at least for in the meantime. Hillary Clinton there, she was part of the Obama administration. The Obama administration criticized often for its foreign policy. Do you see this as a plus or a minus for her to have been Secretary of State under Obama?
I think that's an open question at the moment. I read her as being somewhat defensive in that. What I would have liked to seen is her more of a strategy in terms of how to deal with ISIS today, rather than thinking back about the Obama policy. I think she needs to look ahead. And if she's in the position where she's constantly defending the Obama policy and doesn't have a vision of her own, I think that will be difficult.
Let's go back to our phones. We have just a few minutes left. Pete is with us from Ames. Hi, Pete.
Hi. I'd just like to start with Ben Carson's point about making ISIS look like losers. I think that's a huge objective that needs to be targeted. And by the governor's actions, they're feeding into ISIS by rejecting people when they should actually be saying, no, we're better than what you're telling these young people we are. We're here to help them because we care about them. Mm-hmm. And I think that would just destroy ISIS' ability to recruit.
What about that, Jim, that idea from Pete, thank you, in Ames? If you reject Muslims as a whole and block them as refugees coming into, we talked about, does this play into the hand of ISIS?
Oh, I think it does. I think, Wayne made that comment earlier, and I think he's absolutely on the mark. I mean, if you do not, treat these people as, really human, with human dignity, it's really going to be a recruitment tool for ISIS. And make any discrimination on the basis of religion, it's also going to have the same kind of effect. The question whether it would minimize the recruitment, I mean, I'm not sure that some of these refugees are going to be, we talked about it earlier in the program, how much they're really the recruitment circle for ISIS. It's a very small number at the very, very least here. And so I think that treating them well will be good for us, but I'm not sure that it really necessarily negates the recruitment of ISIS from other venues.
Clayton is with us from Des Moines. I have to make it quick, Clayton, but we do welcome your comment.
Yeah, thanks for letting me be on the show. I've worked for U.S. Committee for Refugees and Immigrants, and the day of the attack, I sat in the living room of an Iraqi refugee that is. City was invaded by ISIS. And then later the city was indiscriminately bombed by the Iraqi government. And so he fled. His family was separated into Turkey and Jordan. And, he was a really broken man weeping. And I just wanted to give a human face to if people get blocked, because these are the type of people that comes in. His brother, fled to Baghdad, but being Sunni was targeted and tortured and killed. So if he can't turn to the U.S., to the U.N., where can he go,
Well, what about the view that we also have on our Facebook page? Hey, Clayton, we can't help everybody. We do feel compassion for these people. We would help if we could, but we have to think of our own security first.
I hear that, but I mean, the reality is less than 1% of global refugees come to the West or to the U.S. So, of course, we can't help them all. That's the reality. But the people that we help, it's life savings, and then it multiplies with remittances sent home, and it really gives a lifeline and hope to the people that are able to leave, which are targeted as the most vulnerable. So, yeah.
Okay, Clayton in Des Moines, thank you very much. Our last caller for this program. Running out of time, we have a minute or so left. Any final thoughts to leave us with, Wayne and Jim? Perhaps you first, if I can give you 30 seconds, and Wayne 30.
Well, I think what we ought to also think about in terms of this debate is exactly how much refugees have really contributed, say, to the state of Iowa over the years. I mean, you think back to the Vietnam and the Southeast Asian refugees that came to the state of Iowa, and even from the Balkans as well, and they've been made great contributions. And I think that is part of the debate, factor that ought to be brought into the debate as well.
Wayne Moyer?
I very much agree with that. The other thing that I would mention is the dangers of ratcheting up the rhetoric. We ratcheted up the rhetoric after 9/11, and that led to some things in terms of domestic surveillance and violation of civil liberties. I think the involvement in Iraq that are very unfortunate. And so we should be very, very careful as we ratchet up the rhetoric here that we don't also get into things that consequences that we do not want.
Wayne Moyer, Rosenfield Professor of Political Science at Grinnell College. Jim McCormick, Professor of Political Science at Iowa State University in Ames. Jim and Wayne, always a pleasure to have you on to pick apart the politics of some very difficult situations. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ben.
Coming up tomorrow on this program, an hour where we look at I visited the Iowa Heroin Summit, Community in Crisis. Heroin is our focus tomorrow on the program. River to River, produced by Lindsay Moon, Emily Woodbury, and Claire Roth. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. In Ames, thanks to Sean McClain.